listening to the Apollo Podcast Network.
Dope shit like that, Jerm. Oh, hi. Welcome back, kids. Follow your dreams. Wanna get a mansion, a jacuzzi, a theater to watch my movies, couple whips and lots of fancy things.
Three, two, one. Welcome to a one-take podcast, episode 172. This week, we are doing a movie that has caused totally normal, insane, and rational discourse online. That is a movie called Civil War, which, by the title, you think would cause a different discourse than it did.
Okay, you're gonna have to give us the rundown on the discourse, because I honestly missed it. And I've seen people talk about how bad the discourse is, but like, I'm not actually seeing the discourse. I'm certain that it exists. It has to. But
basically, that they're just saying this is a movie for radical centrists.
Oh, okay.
As you can imagine, if you've seen the film or read anything about the film, I think that is a very pessimist take on the movie. But
I never thought I would say this, but I think I agree with the discourse, Bruce. I think the discourse is spot on. That was my takeaway as well. I have not discussed it, or at least in any length, so I do not want to say that I'm a part of the discourse, but I don't think the discourse is very far off on that.
Yeah, I don't think the discourse is that far off either.
I don't know. I think we'll talk about it. Because it is a movie for which it is almost, for as expensive and loud and visceral and as heart pounding as the movie can be, it is very much a blank canvas film, which is really saying something about a movie called An American Civil War. Regardless, true. Civil War is from Alex Garland, his third directorial effort. He has written and directed all three of his films. He is a longtime writer for the likes of Danny Boyle, science fiction writer. He wrote 28 Days Later back in the day. Very talented writer who has since made his move into directing. He did, of course, Ex Machina, which everybody loves, Annihilation, a miniseries that he showran for FX called Devs, and this is his third feature film. Civil War came out last week. Fourth. It is, what's up?
Wait, it's got to be fourth because we forgot Men.
He did Men.
Oh, no, he did Men. Okay. Yes, sure. A movie that everyone loved and saw en masse, right?
100% certain. Yeah. This is the first Alex Garland movie I've seen, to be honest with you. So I don't know what his deal is, but this was not a good first one to see.
People may be mad at you online for that, but
Ex Machina goes crazy, bro. You need to go watch Ex Machina. That shit is crazy.
I know. I wanted to go see it when they re-released it in IMAX a couple weeks ago, and I missed it. But
so yeah, just erase everything that I said at the very beginning, because this is his fourth. After 2020, was it 22, 21's Men? 22. Yeah. So Civil War came out last week, has a 7.6 on IMDb, which is shocking, actually, considering how we know how that website works. 75 Metascore, rated R, hour 49 minutes, kind of, for what it is, a breeze to get through. Not that metaphorical breeze to get through. A journey across a dystopian future America following a team of military embedded journalists as they race against time to reach DC before rebel factions descend upon the White House. Written and directed by Alex Garland, stars Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura. I think that's how you spell his name, or say his name. Wagner Moura, Kelly Spaney, Nick Offerman as not Donald Trump, Jefferson White, Nelson Lee, and also our good boy Jesse Plemons is
Mark Texas's finest.
He has a role. He has a role in this film that I'm sure we will talk about at length. Jesus Christ. This was A24's most expensive movie. It is which is saying something because it was only quote unquote $50 million. And Teej just dropped. I don't know where he went. So we'll continue on. We'll soldier on. But it was A24's most expensive movie, definitely Alex Garland's most expensive movie. And it played in a ton of screens as A24 is trying to further their brand and expand into a major studio, which we kind of already, they've won Best Pictures several times now.
At the last Oscars, they won literally like every Oscar.
Yeah.
All of them.
And Teej is back. Live podcasting, folks. So, do y'all want to play the box office game or do you know?
I can play. I don't know.
Teej, I'm not sure we can hear you, but...
No, I don't know the answer. I can play.
Okay, so $50 million budget, Teej, if you have or haven't heard, it is A24's most expensive film. And it looks like it hasn't expanded overseas. Like, it looks like it's only been U.S. and Canada. So take that for what it's worth. Go ahead.
Who's guessing first? Am I guessing first?
Flip a coin. I don't know.
I can guess first. I'm going to guess that it almost made its money back in opening weekend, but not quite. So I'm going to go $40
million. DJ? I'm going to go $29
million. The price would be right for TJ as the opening weekend was $25 million, which... you know, feels like a failure for as much as they've been pressing this movie. Like, it's the biggest thing that A24 has ever put out, like I was saying. But that also counts as the biggest opening weekend for A24.
Which feels shocking as, like, movie nerds that we are who talk about so many A24 movies all the time that it's like, wow, that's it?
Yeah.
But, you know, good for them.
Well, you got to think. I think the highest grossing one that ever came out, I believe, was Everything Everywhere All at Once. But that literally had the staying power of like the Lord of the Rings. Like, it was just in theaters for ever.
And they slow rolled that one so much. Yeah. It was like, fair play to them. It worked. They won every Oscar for it. But I think they put that out in like two theaters. I think one in LA and one in New York, and then slowly expanded like a couple more screens every week. So, Yeah, it makes sense.
Civil War has an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, 76% audience score. Tough and unsettling by design, Civil War is a gripping close-up look at the violent uncertainty of life in a nation in crisis. So, Dex, you already had the are preemptively told us before we got on, you like this movie, but I shall shit on it. So
I'm going to shit on it so much. I do like this movie. I'm going to go ahead and just give my score early so that people know kind of where this is going. I give it a B-, but this movie had the potential to be like an A+, 10 out of 10 movie. And like, the concept sounds so dope. Like, if put in the right hands and like is like taken with the proper level of care, but you could also see a 0 out of 10 in here where it just becomes like, where it's a Gina Carano movie basically. So, you know, it had the potential of either being like just super spectacular or just super horrifying and for the wrong people and being whatever that QAnon movie was last year. Sound of Freedom or Voice of Freedom or whatever the fuck it was called. You know, so both those options are on the table, but it didn't really pick a lane, and that's why I think the centrist discourse is kind of spot on, because this movie for me either needed to take itself way more seriously or way less seriously. Like, if you're going to do the kind of thoughtful unexpected commentary on what, like, take on what a Civil War movie could look like, and you're going to focus on the journalism and you're going to focus on photographers and documenting what's going on in this larger world and kind of focusing us in on a much smaller story that's basically like three characters or whatever. That's cool and you can do that, but I need you to like say something while you do that. I need you to kind of voice an opinion, whether your opinion's right or wrong, whatever. Like, we can litigate that later, but like, please have one. You know, make the context of the war feel more important, make the commentary on the importance of journalism feel more important, make the pursuit of journalism feel more worthwhile, or not do any of that and just make a cool summer blockbuster action movie, like throw Tom Cruise in it, like let's just fuck around, like it's Tom Cruise and Sydney Sweeney driving to Washington D.C. and we're just like throwing one-liners back and forth at each other and we're having a good ass time and there's a lot of explosions and like people are getting hurt doing real stunts or whatever, and this movie comes out in July and it's amazing. But you gotta pick one of those.
But you can't call that movie Civil War.
The hell you couldn't.
Okay. Yes, you could.
But you know, you like pick one of those lanes. Don't kind of sit in the middle and make a movie that isn't thoughtful enough to be like a super serious like award darling, or isn't cool enough to be a summer blockbuster, and is instead just like an April, oh yeah, that happened release. I think this movie is like, it's got scenes that are like really poignant and feel really important, and you're like, damn, that's some dope shit. But then it's like, oh, there's a De La Soul needle drop for some reason. Or like,
unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Simpson song is playing right now. And it's like, what are we doing? Like, have an original score or like pick better fitting songs for your movie. Like, something was missing. It like ends up trying to do a lot of things and not really doing any of them super well. There's some moments in here, like I said, that are super thrilling and gripping, and like Jesse Plemons steals the show. There's a couple other scenes that are like really affecting that I'll probably be thinking about for a long time, but overall it just kind of ends up not really attempting all that much and therefore not really pulling off much either. So yeah, it's a B minus. It could have been great if we would have just picked a lane and just went all the way into it instead of right in the middle. So B minus.
Tej.
I'm gonna have you go. My connection is horrible, but I think I just fixed it. So you go and then I'll
no. Okay. You sound fine to me. So I agree with all of your points and also disagree. So this is why this movie is so fucking frustrating to me. The points of, you know, Alex Garland, a British man, by the way, for the uninformed, doesn't understand American politics, or the doesn't have a grasp of what is happening enough in America to have made this film, and he just dropped again, so maybe he was right. Why would Texas and California be together and all of these things that go unanswered feel secondary to me to what he was trying to do, in that I think he was trying, by using journalists, he was trying to make this movie a mirror into the horrors that war can cause. Does he necessarily land that plane every single time? No, but I think the highs are so high in this movie for me of how horrifying a conflict of this nature could be, that I think it sold that part of the movie for me. Now, where does it feel as big as it needs to be for something as important's the wrong word, for something as divisive as the name Civil War based in America would be, no. And I think that's why I agree with you. And that's, I think, is the larger problem for a lot of people, in that people were expecting this huge grand scale conflict movie. And you get that at the end. And I think some of the filmmaking is brilliant, especially in the end battle scene where it feels like the bullets are coming through the fucking screen at you.
Yeah.
And if you see this thing in, I believe if you see this thing in Dolby or IMAX, you'll be doing yourself a favor, because the filmmaking is so crisp. Some of the battle scenes are that good. I do feel like Alex Garland, the writer, over the past few films has started letting down Alex Garland, the filmmaker, whereas he had these grand ideas early on in his career that he was able to flesh out. And now his filmmaking has come along so much so that it's kind of, the scales have tipped a little bit. I will say that when it comes to his filmmaking. Dex, sight unseen, you'd have to take my word for it. But like, people will always point to Ex Machina because it was so unique at the time for what it was. And it was so well thought out that we hadn't even 10 years ago, nobody was thinking about the AI thing. Or some people were, but you know, on a larger scale, we weren't thinking about the AI thing, and he put it in front of us and everybody's like, oh shit. And that was the first time that I think those ideas had been fleshed out, and he was able to put together a solid enough film around it that those ideas looked good on screen. This is like, he has the kernel of an idea, but the rest are, how can I make this a grand scale movie? That it sort of let him down a little bit. I will say, though, that the weight given to journalists is a little misplaced, though, too. But it is an interesting look. And that was more of a story that he wanted to tell, it feels like, when you watch interviews with him. I believe his like father was a journalist. But it's such a...
His father was a cartoonist who was around a lot of journalists.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that is interesting. But like, so it makes a lot of sense. But the funny thing to me is that we make these not even video journalists or news reporters. They are print media journalists from Reuters and photo journalists. And that is, I don't know what the statement is there, but it is such a odd thing to see that we're going to place this sort of moral compass through the lens of the photo journalists. And then you get to decide how you feel about this thing. But the problem is that like, we aren't oriented in this space. And that's where my problems come in a little bit, is you're not quite oriented in whatever space that you're in. You're not quite sure who's fighting who. And I didn't necessarily want or need the reasons after I watched the film, to be completely honest with you, because it's like, one way or the other, you're going to make a film, and maybe that's the goal of art, is to upset people, I guess, or whatever. One way or the other, you were going to make some film that somebody was going to come out of this with some really fucking bad ideas. And so towing that line, I think, is fair. It's his right to do that. And I came out of it not necessarily needing the who, what, when, where, why, how. And again, I just reiterated this phrase, but by using it as a mirror for people to like look inward a little bit and say like, okay, well, why can't you imagine this happening? Why can't you imagine Texas and California getting together to combat a fascist president? And they say that in the movie. It's not like it completely goes away from it. It's a fascist president who eliminated the FBI, who then sent bomb drone strikes on American citizens. Like, it's,
he hasn't
not,
done an interview in like 2 years. So like, it's, yeah, he's just running shit. Like,
yeah, he's trying to
communicate with the people.
Press on the White House lawn or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not completely without its like, I don't know, the imagery is what I'm trying to say. It's not completely without it. And Nick Offerman plays the president. He presents as a certain way in general, even though his politics are completely different than the way that he presents. But that's an interesting choice to make him the president. I will say, I think the performances, I'm rambling, but I think the performances are really good, regardless of what you think of Kirsten Dunst's stoic performance. I think she's very good. I think Wagner Moore is really, really good. Callie Spaney, who played Priscilla, by the way, is having quite the year in film. That movie I'm going to go watch now, actually, on Max, because I just missed it back in the debate.
Young journalist?
Yeah, she plays the young journalist who...
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, who then is basically imprinted on and so on and so forth. But I think that her wide-eyed, like, horror through the entire thing, and then it leading up to her seeking the thrill ride of it all, is a good character progression in that way. And again, our guy Jesse Plemons fucking rules. He was just like hanging out in Atlanta or wherever they filmed this movie, and she was like, Kirsten Dunst was like, my husband's not doing nothing, so yeah he can come be in this movie.
Honestly, that's the best. Literally, like, the guy who was supposed to play that scene had to back out like a week before filming or whatever, and Kirsten Dunst was just like, yeah, Jesse ain't got shit going on, ask him, let me take
him. Academy Award nominated husband. Not doing anything. We got childcare. It's fine. It'll be fine. I normally, when a movie like this, and I'm going long, Tej, I promise I'll get to you, but like, normally when a movie like this, I would kind of walk away from it after it and not really think about it again. But it left me, this movie specifically, left me wanting to go back to it. And I can't pinpoint, and maybe I'm the dumb centrist thing that like people are pointing at, but like, I can't pinpoint if it's like the filmmaking made me want to go back to it, or if there were just more ideas that I missed that I needed to go and see again. But I think definitely some of the battle scenes will keep you on the edge of your seat. There's, again, the Jesse Plemons moment that we'll talk about in spoilers is probably the most tense moment that you'll watch in theaters this year. And I don't know, something about this movie has made me like not stop thinking about it since I left the theater. And I have to think that that makes it a film worth watching at the very least, and a film worth discussing, which we're doing here. So for all its faults, I still give it a B+. I think I'll definitely watch it again. And I'm sad that Alex Garland is going to step back from making movies after this, but I'm interested to see if he puts down directing, if he can flesh out some more of these ideas writing than he has done recently.
Something you said that stood out to me was about like the journalism thing, and that, like you said, like, that's an interesting choice to make, interesting like kind of place to focus and ground the movie. There's definitely some commentary there, and like choosing to kind of make them the moral compass of the movie. The problem that I have with that choice is that he doesn't really make it feel like that matters that much, like, to the plot of this movie. Like, obviously, like, that's why the plot of the movie happens. Like, they're driving down to go interview the president or whatever. So like, that's like the catalyst for all of the movie happening, but it never feels like, well, when they get there, that's something that's going to like be important. That really matters. Like, that's worth doing. When they get this interview, that's going to change things. When they get this interview, that's going to, you know, make people really stop and think about what's happening or whatever. Cause like, it doesn't. And like, it doesn't even seem like that's what they're trying to do. Like, it doesn't seem like that's why they're trying to do it when they do eventually get there. It just kind of just comes and goes. And the only time they really like stop and reflect on like the meaning of journalism, at least that I can remember, is when Kirsten Dunst is literally like, I thought that by going overseas and documenting these things, I would prevent them from happening here, and that didn't happen. Like, so it's like, okay, does the journalism even matter at all? Like, you know?
Well, yeah, it's a pretty, it can be a pretty nihilistic view of the whole journalistic process, and like even why journalists do this in the first place, where it's like, you know, a lot of these journalists, they won't admit as much, but I've, you know, talked with enough people and been to enough, I haven't been to a war zone, so like don't like, but I've been to enough like shootings and stabbings and things that like people are like thrill seekers when it comes to some of this shit. And so it's like, are these journalists doing it for their own selfish reasons, or are they doing it for, you know, the betterment of whatever country is left, you know, or the betterment of society in general? So they're like sending it back overseas from America to be like, look at what's happening here. We can do better. But, you know, I don't know. I think the whole choice to make it focused on journalism does at points feel more so that he doesn't have to go into the conflict more. And it's holding journalists, who I think we need to trust more in this country, that's my political statement, who I think we should probably rely on a lot more than we do. And the trust of journalists, of course, is like degraded over the last decade. So I think that putting it in the hands of journalists is the choice that was made so that he didn't have to dive into the conflict anymore. Yes and no, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. That makes sense.
Let's see if we can get you some thoughts in here while we got you.
Okay. I went to my, hopefully that changed it, even though I tested my internet and I don't know what the hell was going on. Anyway, so I think that there was a lot of really good things about this movie in terms of the cast was great, the optic, the way that it looked was great, but I just feel like it's obviously it's a very anti-war movie, and you always run when you're making an anti-war movie, which is really the message of the film. When you're making an anti-war movie, it's always a bit of a weird position to put the viewer in, because war looks fucking awesome on screen. It just does. Just one of those things that really looks awesome on screen. And this war looks and sounds fucking awesome on screen. That being said,
it's incredible to look at.
That being said, war is inherently political. In fact, war might be the most political thing that has ever existed in our planet. War is inherently political. So to just slap up a president and say, hey, this guy's a fascist, and like, that should be easy. And maybe 20 years ago, that's an easy way to make your quote unquote villain, because he's a fascist, and who would want a fascist president? However, unfortunately, we live in an era where some people might want a fascist president based on what his beliefs are, and if his beliefs aligns with their beliefs. And so dropping this movie into this political climate in America, knowing the political climate in America, the fact that he's British doesn't change anything. You know, he said in an interview that they're dealing with similar political things in terms of the far right and Europe as well, and in the UK where he's from. So like, he's aware of the political moment. He just doesn't want his movie to touch it. And I just don't think that part of it works. And I should give a spoiler warning, because I have to give a spoiler warning. So if you have not seen this film and you'd like to see this film, it's an enjoyable film, go see it, but stop this podcast or this right now, because I'm going to spoil the end of this movie. And it's not the most unpredictable ending to a movie, but you still want to experience it. Okay, spoiler warning is over. if you are going to quite literally show people barge into the White House and assassinate the president, that has to mean something. Whether you like or hate the president being murdered in that brutal of a way, no matter if he deserved it or not, is shocking to a viewer. It is a thing that you put on the screen that you know will get the people going.
We just shot the president in the head, execution style. Didn't even barely let him get his last words out. However, because they don't give you any background about why we're here other than the oh, yeah, he's a fascist. Because we don't know anything about how we got here, it cheapens that moment in a huge way for me because I just saw the president get murdered and I felt nothing. It was fucking cool, but in terms of how I should feel about this character now being dead, I felt literally nothing. And I think also, if you want to put a spotlight on journalists and the import of the work that they do, it is really hard to do that in an environment where we don't understand the stakes of the work that they're doing. We know that it is dangerous, obviously, but we all know that reporting on a war in that kind of close-up fashion is very dangerous. They're literally behind people doing raids where they're right in, like, their bullets flying, like, right where they are. So it's incredibly dangerous, and it makes for great, it's great filmmaking. Like, I agree with what Royden said, whereas Garland, the filmmaker, really was let down by Garland, the writer here. The filmmaking is mind-blowing. Some of those, that sequence where the guy is behind the pillar and they're trying to get him back to a safe position, and that sequence is insane. My heart was beating so fast.
It felt like the bullets were hitting my chair. Like
it really did. Like the sound of these guns is insane in this film. I think that part sets up so well. Obviously, we've talked about the scene with our favorite son who comes to the movie for 10 minutes and just is the most horrifying thing that I've seen on screen this year. Like, he's just phenomenal at everything. I think we need to have a serious conversation about him being a leading man. But anyway, he's great. And I love the happenstance that happened that he was able to be on set and play that character because of what happened to the guy who was supposed to play him before. However, I feel like something is missing, and that something is like stakes. You have to... unfortunately, you can't not make a quote-unquote apolitical movie. I don't think there's such thing as an apolitical movie, but you cannot make a movie that is that down the line trying not to piss people off. You made a movie that's a B, which is my grade, a B, when this movie should have been an A. It should have easily been an A. The cast did their job. The cinematography people, the crew people did their job. And the writer let them all down and turned this movie into a B when it should have been an A. It should have been a classic. So the Neo drafts just don't work from the very first one to the very last one. I felt nothing. I like De La Soul. I like that De La Soul song. It just flat out did work for me in that sequence. That sequence, by the way, is cool as shit, but it just should not be there. Like, just, and I didn't, the weird thing is when they were playing, like, the score, like, there is a score to this movie. Not everything is a needle drop. But I think the score's fine. I think the score does a good job of ramping up the tension. But then every time there's a needle drop, like an actual song, it just took me out of the movie and it took me out of the moment because the needle drops in this movie don't work. Other than that, had a really great time. It's not my favorite Adam Scarlett movie, but when you can make something, just the filmmaking, no matter what you think about the actual movies themselves, when you can make an Annihilation and you can make a Civil War in terms of what it looks like, it makes sense why A24 is throwing a lot of money at him. And I like that they're doing it, and I hope that they keep doing that. I just hope that next time he wants to, you cannot make a movie that doesn't involve politics, and I'm talking about big P politics, not small P politics. If you cannot make a movie about a civil war that does not involve big P politics, especially not in 2024, that's a ludicrous assertion. It's dead on arrival in terms of that. He still made a movie that I think is a B, which I think is a very high grade. If you had told me that this movie was going to literally have no big P political standpoint, that I would, like, this movie's an F. It's fucking cool. It's a great ride. It's tense as hell. It's short. It's a great watch. It's a great time at the movie theater. I gave it a B.
What do you think of the assertion that, and I've seen this assertion made, and I think it was just made on our favorite podcast that we quote The Big Picture, which was, it was that a lot of this movie is the thought that Americans are just not communicating enough in general. And that was a big thesis point of this, or thesis statement of this movie, is that we're just not, because there is a part in the movie, another spoiler alert, where they're the sniper scene where they don't even know who they're shooting at.
That scene was fucking awesome. It was.
And I just think that is an interesting... And the Winter Wonderland
part also works. The Winter Wonderland entrance is, like, so scary. And then it's like, that was a great sequence. But he did an interview where he basically said, like, we are being taught by our algorithms and these news channels to feel like we're in a holy war against people who, quote-unquote, have other beliefs than us. And I think on some level he is right, and it's obviously at the center of the film. But I think that is excuse me, Alex Garland, I know you're listening to this podcast. I think that is a cowardly way out of trying to avoid Big B politics in your movie that has to have Big B politics in it. You don't have to. We can talk to each other, and politics can be important. Like, both of them are important to the film. You can make your point about us not talking to each other, but you can also have people in their silos giving us some information about what the Big P politics were that led to a literal civil war, people literally storming Washington, D.C. I have to know why they're storming D.C. You can't show me that unless we're in, like, you watch a movie like Olympus Has Fallen. Great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Even that movie gives you some level of why they are you are literally attacking the most protected building in the country, and the president is in there. And you have to give me stakes. And Olympus Has Fallen doesn't have any Big P politics in it at all, but they give you a reason why the president is going to be killed. And so when the president is or is not killed or is or is not abducted, it means something when you see it. You can't shoot the president in the head, execution style, and take pictures over his body like Fortnite. But I have no idea how we got to that moment. It just doesn't. It rings hollow in that moment. But it was fucking cool.
And to me, like, it's, even if you are going to just not give us the stakes of, like, the actual titular civil war that's happening and why we're storming the White House and we're killing the president, you have to at least give us stakes of why our journalist heroes are here and what they're about to do now that they, like, made it to this point where they have sacrificed pretty much all of their friends, as far as we can tell, to make this journey. And, like, you get to the end of it and it's just over. It doesn't matter. Like, the movie, like, stops you for a couple of minutes and is like, yeah, we sacrificed all those people for nothing. Like, all we just watched all of our friends get murdered by, yeah, spoiler alert, Jesse Plemons for no reason. Like, and then they just go through with it anyway, and then the movie's over. So it's like, what if the stakes are not in the actual war and the stakes aren't in the journalism that's happening to cover the war? Where are the stakes? What are we doing?
No, I tend to agree with you on that. I had a thought that escapes me. Now, I was going to say that, and it's just like, they're also dragging this Callie Spaney character across country who's wanting to discover all of this for herself and basically discovers that all of this is hell. But then in the very end, she's also like, I equated it, maybe I'm making the wrong region. She's having like a sexual experience when it comes to like how into it all of this that she is. Yeah, and that
confused me. We have to talk about that character choice and the Kirsten Dunst character choice, because I don't understand what was happening there. But please continue.
Well, no, and just to further the journalism part of all of this, it's like, is this good or is this bad? And maybe that's, you know, is it good for the people that are doing it, or is it bad for them? Because they sort of swap sides. Obviously, Kirsten Dunst is like hollow the entire time. And then her character choice at the very end, that didn't really make sense to me. And that was a big gripe I had with the film as well, too, is her character choice to then, spoiler alert, sacrifice herself for the Callie Spaney character at the very end.
See, that's not even what I was talking about. That made perfect sense to me. The character choice that didn't make sense to me is when they get to all the action and Kirsten Dunst is just cowering in the corner, afraid. And the new girl is like, oh yeah, fuck yeah, I'm getting in here. We're getting content, baby. Like, we're taking photos. And Kirsten Dunst is just crying in the corner. Like, I thought you'd do this. Like, I thought you went overseas.
You left out a big part of why she didn't just decide to be like that. She saw the old black man and one of her best friends or colleagues brutally like get murdered, basically protecting them. I thought it was just like unresolved trauma they were putting it on her in that moment. I thought it perfect sense.
But if you're this like hero journalist that everyone loves because you go to all these wars and do all of this, I would think that you would have like seen people get shot before and probably lost some people who were close to you. This doesn't seem like
that's not the same
the point where you should be breaking down.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's seen people literally light on fire.
Those are strangers. That's obviously not easy to deal with. But this was her colleague. And by the way, she is the one that allowed him to come on this journey, although she didn't make the decision. And he ultimately died saving her life. That's a bit different than watching strangers die in a war when you know you're walking up to a war.
But you already knew that. You were at the base camp, and that had already happened. Like, you didn't have to come on this part of the journey.
Well, that's true. She literally could have just like, nah, I can't make it, bros.
Yeah. I'm out. Well, yeah, like, I'm cooked. This is too much. Like, you didn't have to go through with this.
Well, I think the point of that is to say that, like, people will chase the story to, like, to what end? And that's where I think this being more of a journalism movie than it is a war movie is really, I keep saying interesting. I need a different word. But, like, is an interesting choice in that, like, yeah, this eventually just becomes, even though it's surrounded by some of the most spectacular battle scenes that we've seen in a movie in a long time, like, this just becomes the chasing the story movie in the very end, which is,
and it becomes like, the student becomes the master story also.
Yeah,
like,
but remember, she is the one that realizes that, because, you know, the president sends like a fake car, like a car that they all think that the army thinks the president is in the car, so they chase the car. But she's the one who snaps back in. She's like, oh no, he's in the White House, and so she's basically the first one on the scene because she's the smartest one on the scene. She is the one that realized that the president wasn't in. They sent like a deception. They sent a car away from the White House when it was checkmate. So they sent cars away, and then the army's chasing the cars, right? But she's the one that stopped. She's like, wait a second. No, the president is actually still in the White House. I think he's still in there. And she's basically the first one on the scene to, quote unquote, get the story. So, like, even though she was having a very traumatic response, she snapped back in and she saved the day. Basically, she made sure they got on the scene before everybody else did.
Real quick, Tej, before your internet goes, what do you think of the choice to like sacrifice herself at the very end, and also the Callie Spanning character catching her like in frame in the picture? I still don't know how I feel about that ending.
Well, they referenced it early because she asked the Kirsten Dunst character, will you shoot me if I die? And then what happened was she ended up shooting Kirsten Dunst's character when she died. I thought it was a nice callback. And also, I just think it looks so cool the way that he's cutting the actual shots they're taking into the movie throughout the movie. I just think that's a very cool way of presenting photojournalism. And it was obviously he wanted there to be photojournalists because there's some tie-in to like a filmmaker versus a photojournalist are showing you things. So, but I just thought it was really cool how they incorporated that. And he made being a journalist look like the coolest fucking shit ever. Although they were all like miserable. He shot them taking pictures of stuff. Just felt so fucking cool. And I part of it on the park. In terms of her sacrificing herself, I was fine with it. It felt like she didn't have to do that, but it was like the gesture. You have to have a grand gesture. I was fine with it. I was eventually fine with it. It was clear that character had a lot of stuff going on, and I didn't think she was going to make it out of the movie alive, to be honest. I never did.
Well, it's just so like hollow to me though too, because it's like it happens so often in movies where you'll have this young up and coming protege type character that's tagging along that then goes on to make the dumbest decisions that any human has ever made.
Yep.
Ever. It happens all the time in movies. And I'm so tired of that character trope of like, I'm going to stand immediately in the middle of where the fucking bullets are coming. Like, what? You know, or I'm going to hop in this car going a million miles an hour with this journalist that I don't know. And yeah, I guess it's like the fervor of youth. And like, you think you literally think you're 10 foot tall and bulletproof. But she also in this same movie has been dumped into a pit with non-combatants' bodies. So I don't know, like, it's and such a weird
that's
switch.
The weird part to me is that it feels like that was the catalyst for her being like, okay, actually fuck it, like we going all in now, like, yeah. Like there's no turning back. She got out of that pit, she threw up in the car, she watched dude die slowly next to her while she was just sitting in her vomit, I guess, by the way.
Yeah.
And she ever since she, as soon as she got out of that truck, they boxed my mans up, and she was like, you know what? I'm built different now. We're getting in there. I came this far. I'm getting all the shots. Fuck it. Like, I'm getting, Kirsten Dunst is about to die on top of me. I'm getting the shot. The president is about to die in front of me. I'm getting the shot. Like, we're, whatever we got to do, we're going to do it for the Vine. I'm taking all the shots. But the problem that I have with that is, again, doesn't feel like that, like, means anything. Because it's like, what's she doing with these photos? She's going to put them on Twitter? She's going to throw them up on her Instagram, a little carousel?
Like, the revolution will be televised, brother. You know?
Yeah, what are we doing? Like, why have we been on this journey? It doesn't feel like we're reaching anything. We just know that they're going to try and get to the president. Wagner Mora gets his quote, I guess. Good for you, buddy. And then the movie's over. It's like, what was that all this was for?
I do have to comment on this because it feels like a lot of people are missing this. It's like, you know, that quote wasn't anything at the end of the movie, but the man says that in that, like, in their dying moments, they never give you anything that's good. Fascist, or these leaders never give you anything that's good. And is they dying disappoint quote. You, yeah. Yeah. It disappoints you. And I did like that though, at the very end where he's like, that'll do, that'll be fine. I thought that also was a really good comeback too, regardless of how you feel about him getting shot in the head at the very end of it. So, yeah. And the reason that I said it, like, it ramps up for her in her character. So she literally has a line where she goes, oh fuck, I'm so close. And I was like, okay, so what is happening here? When she's like that close to the White House, I was like, this was a choice. This was a choice to do this. And maybe, like, I'm so internet brain that I'm like, that's probably not what he was going for. But to me, it, like, she's in the thick of it. And she's like super excited about everything that's happening when you're throwing Tomahawk missiles at the fucking Lincoln Memorial. She's like having a blast. So I'm like, it is such a weird character ramp up.
And that kind of builds, like, it doesn't actually build. It just comes out of nowhere.
She's ready to go.
It would have made way more sense for her to be the one that's like shut down in this situation versus Kirsten Dunst. But for whatever reason, Alex Garland just decided, like, no, actually Kirsten Dunst is like the one who was just overcome by trauma and cannot move and whatever, but also going to be the one who senses danger better. I don't get what was going on with that last set piece. It was cool to look at, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me in the larger narrative of the movie.
Teej, are you still with us? There he is. All right.
Just emerging out of the beach house.
I was resetting my internet.
I think the
way that he decided, I didn't really think about the fact that maybe she should be the one that's awestruck him. I literally just chalked it up as a factor of, like, Kirsten Dunst has known this guy for decades, so him dying in the way that he died would be very traumatic for her. But also, it should have probably been very traumatic for the little girl too, especially when she literally was in a whole big ass grave,
open grave,
which that should have been enough to where now she shouldn't be Bruce McClane in the third act. I thought that was a bit weird in terms of how she ramped up as well.
While we have you, and hopefully we can talk about this while your internet is still with us. Jesse Plemons gives the most affecting performance in this movie, and he says like 10 lines. So we've gone this long without talking about it. The full spoiler is that the Callie Spaney character and another journalist speed off into the distance because they're thrill seekers, and like, this is what journalists do. They smoke cigarettes and like get the photo, you know, no matter the cost. But he's going a million miles an hour. They somehow get run off the road and captured by militants who we don't know what side they're on. Another kind of problem with the movie, but it wants you to show, like, I believe that it wants you to decide that this could be anyone, you know, when war happens, anyone can turn feral, or anyone can turn not the tribalistic is probably what I'm looking the word for, regardless, they stumble across Jesse Plemons' character dumping what has to be a million bodies into a hole. I think it was a million. It was the most bodies ever put on film. And they have Callie Spaney and these this other journalist whose name I'm blanking on is at gunpoint. They decide, oh, we're journalists. They won't kill us. Let's go walk up to him. And Tej, while we have you, what did you think about that scene in general?
It was the scariest shit I've ever seen. It was a great scene. I love that the black man is like, y'all are fucking insane. We should not engage with those people. And I had to die when he was the one who was right the whole time. But that scene was great. And Jesse Plemons, he's a leading man, guys. Him and Brian Tyree Henry are leading men. Let's put them where they should be.
But yeah, Jesse Plemons stole the show in this one scene in this movie. And A24 definitely knew that because he is way too prominent in the trailers for an uncredited cameo. Like, he's technically uncredited in this movie.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's an uncredited cameo. Them putting him so prominently in every version of the trailer for this movie just goes to show they knew what they had on their hands. But yeah, that scene is just, you're on the edge of your seat because you're like, anything can happen right now. As soon as he shoots that first guy, you're like, oh shit.
Oh.
The stakes have ramped up. Business has picked up. Like, I don't know what the fuck is about to happen next, because like, obviously you literally meet those two characters like 45 seconds before they're murdered in front of you. So it's like, of course they're expendable, but it feels like everybody is expendable at that moment because you're like, what? Jesse Plemons might do any fucking thing. And yeah, he delivers every line in it just so perfectly. He plays the ultimate, like, perfect sleazeball, like, probably racist, like, guy in every, like, in any situation. You can put Jesse Plemons in there and have him be like kind of sort of racist, and it's just gonna work. He's like the male Reese Witherspoon. Where you're like, they never like do anything overtly racist, but you're like, they gotta be racist. And he nailed it once again. So shout out to him. Martex is fine.
It's getting to the point where it's like, Jesse, you're a little bit too good at pointing a gun and looking menacing around people. You're getting a little too like Todd in Breaking Bad. This guy, like he's getting a little too good.
Or even Judas and the Black Messiah, like he doesn't even have a gun in it. He's just like standing there clapping. You're like, oh, this is the most racist person ever.
I really liked how
I think that
in the scene where they have like the, where you pull up on Jesse Plemons, you can see that it's like shot from a distance. You can see there are bodies sliding off of a truck and being put into a ditch, but you don't have like a scope of how many bodies are down there. So when you pull up close and she falls down there and you see how many bodies are down there, it is so shocking.
Yeah, I just thought that the way that he delivered every line, where he was like, he was just so matter of fact about everything. He was so cold and deadpan, where he was saying, you know, well, what kind of American are you? You know? Okay.
The dude's like stammering, Missouri, and muttering in front of him. And he's just like,
he's like
fucking doing the Pulp Fiction thing. Like, it's awesome.
Do you speak English? English. And he's like, okay, Missouri, Colorado, that's America. And it's like, it's so crazy cold. And yeah, I was sweating. I was literally like, oh fuck, like what is gonna happen? Like, Jesse Plemons was gonna walk into the theater and be like, what America are you from? And you're just like, oh, okay. No, but that scene alone, I think that's gonna be it's already a meme, like, which is, if nothing else comes from that movie, I'm glad we got that.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got that. Good. We've talked about this for about an hour. I'm probably going to see it again. I probably will see it again, which is saying something, mostly because I just want to hear it in the theater, because you're not going to be able to replicate this at home, just how awesome it sounded. And I want to get that visceral experience a little bit more, but yeah, I can't believe I'm going to say I'm going to watch this movie again.
If it like shows up on Max or whatever in a few months, I might turn it on just to like, you know, kind of skip through to some of my favorite parts of this, but I don't think I'll sit in the theater for it again. It just, yeah, like I said, yeah, it just same, doesn't same build way. Where it builds to just doesn't work well enough for me to want to sit through the whole thing again. Fortunately, it's not actually that long.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think I'm going to be carving out time in the theater to go see this again. When we like Abigail coming out.
Yeah. You know? Which I'm not going to like fight you over, because I actually understand that point too. So it's like, it's that kind of movie where I'm like, I get it. We won't do what we're watching. Cause Tiege, the boogeyman got you. I don't know what to tell you. It comes and goes. So we're going to wrap it up. We'll wrap it up here, do a shorter podcast this week. But as always, you can find us at Apollo HOU. You can find us at One Take Pod on Twitter, formerly X. I'm doing it that way. And yeah, go follow us at Apollo HOU. Don't talk to us about the Astros. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Go follow us at One Take Pod. Like, download, subscribe, rate, review the podcast. We would really appreciate that. As always, Dex, what are we doing?
Hashtag support Florence Pugh. Can you imagine if she was in this movie instead of, what's her name?
Callie Spaney?
Yeah, her.
Instead of Kirsten Dunst?
I'm surprised we didn't talk about that. What did y'all think about leading lady Kirsten Dunst?
You have a Kirsten Dunst thing.
I don't call it that.
Don't call it that.
I think that she has, you are undecided on Kirsten Dunst is what I would say, but I think she has become a really, I think a good leading lady since breaking out of the Spider-Man stuff. I think the stoicism in her performance, a lot of people will like count that for lack of personality. I think she's really good. I know we said we were wrapping up the podcast, but I like her. I mean, that's a bit bold take of me to love longtime Hollywood actress Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
I thought she was great.
Multiple decade star, Academy Award nominee. Kirsten Dunst. Yeah, I like her too. I do think, so I know we said we were wrapping up the pod, but I got to tell the story. I was like, one of my coworkers asked me about this movie today. And I started like describing like, oh, like, you know, it was okay. Like it could have been better. I was expecting something different. And I was like, yeah, Kirsten Dunst's character is like a little weird for me, whatever. And she was like, Kirsten Dunst? And I was like, yeah, she's the main character. She was like, I didn't even know she was in the movie. So that's a little something about how they marketed this film.
But yeah, Jesse Plemons may have gotten more screen time on that commercial than he did. That's
anyway,
something to be said.
Hashtag support Florence Pugh.
Hashtag support Florence Pugh.